Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Happy Saints Sunday, everybody. It is week one of the NFL season. We are starting out our Saints football coverage, 8 a.m. here in the Caesars Superdome. Want to thank everyone for helping us set up this great location here inside the dome. Ashley O and Luke Augusta getting us ready for Saints versus Panthers week one, Jeff. And it's good to be talking about regular season football now. Obviously, we got psyched for training camp, then we got all pumped for preseason play, and now the real deal, Holyfield, is around as we take on an NFC South rival, too, to begin the year.
Yes, yes, and I had a kind of an art imitates life moment this morning, because I had to jumpstart my car on my way to the
All right, okay. Morning.
I had to put a little extra juice into it
to get
it to turn over. I need the Saints to come out hot. They cannot. There's no jump start that can be happening today. You need to get out there and you need to give the crowd something to cheer about early in this game. You got to do it. There's no slow starts. Those are over. You got to go out there and play.
I know they used to have the Juice Boys, and now it's what, the Coffee Crew or something?
Coffee Cleanse? No, that's not right.
But the defense was talking about being, you know, coffee, you know, something, but even though no one else drank coffee on the defense.
Yeah, well, that's the weird thing. The linebackers' kind of mantra is they want to be a coffee of the defense.
There you go.
To this point, the only guy I can find out that drinks coffee is DeMario Davis, and it's because he's the old guy. All these young guys. I think Jalen Ford's exact words were, "I'm not old enough to drink coffee." And I'm like, excuse me, sir.
What are you talking about, right?
I was drinking coffee early in college. I don't know what you're talking about. But, you know, these are healthier people than I am, so I need the coffee. They don't, but no, I like that's kind of their idea. And the funny thing is, so Billy Gay, actually, I found this out after he got here. His nickname, his long-standing nickname, is the Juice Man.
Yeah,
and I got an interview with him. We'll play it during the pregame show, but so he's that guy anyway. Like, I think that's funny that, you know, Quan always used to be that guy. Quan Alexander was kind of the Juice guy, and they called him the Juice Boys. Now they brought in the Juice Man. And they're trying to be coffee. I don't know. It's a weird – these metaphors are getting
– whatever it helps, you know, ignite that team early on. Yeah. We've heard that a lot of folks and the players, coaches talk about that fast start, and that's just not a fast start to the season schedule. It's also a fast start in games because there were too many times last year we saw them come out for, you know, opening kickoff, and it just didn't seem to have that – quote unquote juice to start the games, and then boom, you come out halftime, you're trying to play catch up, and you know, and more often times than not, they weren't able to do that and came up short. Sometimes, especially during the end of the year, things started clicking a little more. We just need that juice to be there when they come right out the tunnel.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's true on both sides of the ball. Like, everyone wants to criticize the offense from last year, and for good reason. There's a reason you moved on from Pete Carmichael. There's a reason you brought in Clint Kubiak, changed the scheme, changed all these assistant coaches. Things weren't going the way you wanted, but there was also issues on the defensive side of the ball. We talked all last year about slow starts on defense, right? You look at all these games, I think Houston's a good example. Indy's a good example. Jacksonville's a good example. Like, you got it figured out, but you got it figured out too late in the game where you had to make a comeback, and obviously the offense didn't do any favors in the first half. I remember at one point I was talking to Tyrann Mathieu, I think it was after the Vikings game, and I was like, do you need to just start yelling at each other pregame instead of at halftime?
Right.
And he was like, yeah, maybe we do, because they couldn't figure it out. It was a very frustrating thing because you know this is a talented defense, and you, by the end of the game, have figured out, okay, we know what we're doing. We know how to slow, like, kind of get our teeth into this. But for whatever reason, they couldn't do it in the first half. So hopefully that's not the same. Hopefully that changes this year, especially in a game like this where I do expect it to be low scoring. That's what this that's what this Carolina defense prides itself on, is playing everything over the top. The safeties play deep, your zone underneath, and they're funneling everything to the middle of the field, right? So you're going to have long drives. You're going to shorten the game because there's going to be fewer possessions, because every Saints offensive drive is going to have to be, I don't know, 8-10 plays, depending on where you start from. You got to kind of methodically march it downfield. So there's not going to be a ton of points. That's why the Panthers were top five in yardage. Well, one of the reasons the Panthers were top five in yardage allowed last year in terms of defense. So, you know, that's going to be a big part of it. You got to execute in this type of game.
Before we get into more of Saints talk, just want to give a shout-out to LSU in that Nichols game yesterday. I thought the Colonels came out with a lot of juice playing the Tigers. They did lose 44-21. But
they covered the spread.
I felt Coach Tim Rebo really had his team prepped really well going into Baton Rouge to play this LSU squad. And obviously at the end, you could tell the talent level was just far superior on the LSU Tigers side, which was expected, like you mentioned, with that 51-52-point spread going into the game.
I never trust big spreads.
No,
like that.
Exactly. But much respect to the Nichols football team and Coach Rebo for their showing against LSU.
No question. We should also mention Tulane. Tulane, you know, they probably should have won that game.
That was disgusting. I felt they got robbed on that call.
I'm a Mensa maniac. I'm a fan. I think he's going to be really good. But now we're in NFL season. We props to LSU. Tulane, I think, is going to have a really strong year by the end of it. They got to win this week, Oklahoma State. But we're going to talk Saints today.
Oh, yeah. I didn't want like the hate text to start coming in already on game day. I was like, why aren't you guys mentioning LSU?
I don't know, because we're sitting in the Superdome. This is what we're supposed to talk about. It's in front of us. We can see it.
But there was football local to last night, and obviously a big LSU audience tuning into as well. Going back now onto this Saints side of things, the Superdome, you know, being the host of the Super Bowl this year, obviously has a lot of folks excited too and anxious for a lot of fans who didn't come for preseason action. Going to be filing into this dome for the first time today. Get to see a whole lot of these upgrades. And, Jeff, that's one of the things I feel like, you know, I'm kind of jealous of. I've talked about not really getting to partake in that opening sense of feeling of what Champion Square is even like. But just walk around the dome and see the new amenities that are involved for all the people coming in.
Yeah, no, and one thing, I know Mike Haas had an interview with Ben Hales on WWL 2 weeks ago, last week.
Yes.
To kind of preview what everyone needs to know. So anyone coming to the Dome, if you haven't downloaded the app, the Saints app, that's going to help you out immensely. So if you're an app person, if you don't have a flip phone and you're going to the Dome, you should have that, because it's going to have your instructions. It's going to have like the turn-by-turn directions to get to anything you want. It's like a GPS in there for navigating inside the building, which I think is going to be handy for a lot of people, because the entrances are different. Like, you got to go to the gate on your ticket. You got to make sure you enter the building the right way, because if you don't, a lot of times you're not going to be able to get to where you need to go to get to your seat. If you're used to going the same way every time, you got to make sure you have that right. So, no, there's a lot of fun stuff in here. Those 40-yard bars, when they say 40 yards, they're not kidding. Those things, you're walking by them for a long time. You know, it's very tempting.
You might
start walking by the bar not wanting a drink, but by the end of it, you're like, you know what? You've convinced me. You know, that's how long these bars are. So, now there's a lot of fun stuff in here.
I'm just waiting to see incoming TikTok videos this football season of fans doing their own 40-yard dashes. Who can get from one side of the bar to the end the fastest?
That sounds dangerous. I think
alcohol and 40-yard dashes?
From a liability perspective, I think we should make sure we're not endorsing that.
Looking at the Carolina Panthers coming to this matchup, we always talk about familiarity with football teams. Obviously, you know, you play them twice a year. A little bit different this time around, kind of, with Dave Canales taking over, a new head coach, but someone the Saints are familiar with scheme-wise. They saw him with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, no, the Saints, I'm sure they've been scouting two teams this week, right? And that's the frustrating thing, is trying to figure out, okay, what are the Panthers going to do, and what has Dave Canales done? I'm sure they went back and looked at Seahawks games, too, from his time with Seattle working with Geno Smith.
Yeah.
The interesting thing to me about Dave and I have the same kind of feelings about Sean Payton with Bo Nix. Everyone wants to talk about Sean Payton as a quarterback whisperer because of what he did with Drew Brees and, you know, the success he was able to have with backups like Teddy and whoever else you want to throw in there. But he's never dealt with a young quarterback, a young developmental quarterback. He's never sat through a rookie quarterback. Sean Payton hasn't. So how is he going to deal with that? Dave Canales is the same way. Everyone wants to look at Dave and say he's a quarterback whisperer. He's going to figure out Bryce Young. Whatever's wrong with Bryce, whatever happened last year that messed him up, he can fix it and he can get him where he needs to go. Well, you look at it's like and the examples of that are, okay, he did it with the Seahawks. And Geno Smith, well, he was a veteran quarterback. He was a reclamation project, not a development project, right? You're talking about Baker Mayfield, same thing.
Yeah.
He's not a – he's a reclamation project. Bryce Young is a developmental project. So, and I think those are two different things, and we'll see how Sean handles it. We'll see how Dave handles it. But this idea that he's going to walk in there and suddenly figure out how to fix Bryce Young, I don't know. I think the idea that that's going to happen quickly is unlikely. And even you look at, you know, the Bucs last year, they went 9-8. That Seahawks team, I think they went 10-7. It's still it's an uphill battle, but I do like Dave Canales. I think he's a good head coach, and I think he will figure it out. But this is a game that you look at and you say, okay, even if the Panthers do turn it around this year, which I think they're going to be a lot better this year than they were last year. They're not a two-win team. No NFL team is a two-win team. Let's be real. I think that this game, the Saints should feel like, okay, we're still getting that kind of in the process Panthers team. They haven't figured it all out yet, whereas we are a defense that feels like we know what we're doing. This is an offense that the Saints offense that, while, you know, is different in terms of scheme, is very static in terms of playmakers, in terms of the guys that are running the offense and are comfortable with each other. The Panthers can't say that. They've changed a ton. I think the numbers are 23 of their 53-man roster is different this year than it was at last year.
That's crazy. Two games, right?
That's a full turnover. You know, when you're talking about key players, right, especially on defense with Brian Burns, some of these guys. So Frankie Louvu is not there anymore, and he was always a guy that really gave the Saints fits. So,
for sure, right.
No, I mean, I think I think the Panthers are going to be a much better team this year than they're getting credit for. I don't think they're going to be a much better team in this game than we're giving them credit for. I think the Saints need to take advantage of a young quarterback, a new system, and a team that's still figuring a lot of it out.
Yeah, we'll hear a little bit about some of the inside of the Panthers and their new regime with the Believe in Panthers podcast host Des Johnson. Have some cuts from him we'll play in the show. Also hear from Derek Carr, Saints quarterback, veteran defensive end Cam Jordan, tight end Juwan Johnson, and a cut about Trevor Penning from offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak. Hear what he had to say, because I know Penning, you know, unfortunately draws a lot of ire of Saints fans when talking about this offensive line. But Kubiak mentions, obviously, I don't want to spoil the entire cut, but it is a five-man job. The cohesion needs to be there with the entire group. It's not just Trevor Penning.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I said this a few times. You know, Trevor Penning has to be Taliese Fuaga's best friend right now. Just because, like, how much time have we actually spent talking about the fact that the Saints are going to have a rookie left tackle starting week one. That's it. I don't care who it is.
So glossed over.
I don't care if he's the number one pick in the draft. That's a stressful environment. That's difficult. You don't know how he's going to react his first game in the Superdome. You don't know how he's going to handle, you know, whatever they throw at him. You know, I'm sure they're going to throw stunts his way. They're going to try to confuse him. They're going to try to mess him up. And we've spent all offseason talking about, well, can Trevor Penning survive on the right side? You know, the real nightmare scenario isn't necessarily that you have to help Trevor. It's that you have to help both sides. It's that you don't feel comfortable leaving either tackle on an island. So the stress level for Trevor is whether he can do the job. The stress level for Taliese is whether he can be rock solid from day one. And that's a lot to ask. So, you know, we're going to see. You know, thankfully he's not having to figure out Brian Burns. I don't think, you know, like Jadeveon Clowney, while a very good pass rusher, is 31 years old and probably more of a situational guy at this point in his career. I don't think the Panthers really have that stud edge rusher that they have in the past. So hopefully the Saints can kind of take advantage of that with their scheme. This is going to be the first time we see them actually scheme up some protections, really, and help in ways that, you know, to kind of protect those guys a little bit, the offensive line. But it's also going to be interesting, and we're going to talk about this a good bit later, is how they handle Derek Brown, because he's going to be a load on the inside. Like, in some matchups, you might be able to get away with a little less attention on the interior guys and help to the edges. I don't think that's going to be the case today. I think you're going to have to help on the interior, because Derek Brown is the stud on this defensive line group.
And I think with Taliese Fuaga, too, I heard two different sides of the position switch coming for him. You know, he used to play right tackle in college for the majority, and now being switched to left tackle, some folks not making too big of a deal of the move. Some folks say, I don't understand what the team's doing. Why don't you just keep him at somewhere where he's comfortable as a rookie?
Yeah, and the best point I heard about it was like take a step back and ask yourself, if the Saints had a startable left tackle, a guy they had any faith in whatsoever starting at left tackle, would you have moved Taliese across the line? The answer is no. The answer is no, because you would have left him at his comfortable position at right tackle. So, I mean, I'm not super concerned about Tally. I think he's going to be fine. But you're talking about week one. You're talking about day one. Like, you don't have there's no opportunity to work him in slowly. You know, and that's tough. Like, you never want to be in that situation where you're relying so heavily on a rookie in his NFL debut, and that's where the Saints are. So we'll have to see.
Under construction is this Saints offensive line. I feel like we're going to get a lot of, I guess, questions answered today to see what exactly lies in store ahead, because I think it's going to be the major talking point throughout the season.
Yeah, the renovation of the Superdome is complete. The renovation of the offensive line might still have a few weeks to go.
I want to mention, too, to folks, obviously, with the Super Bowl being in town this year, there's still a lot of construction going around the city, especially to Poydras, other spots around the Superdome. We are not a early arriving crowd in these parts. But I would recommend you try to get out there a little earlier today, as you might experience some
more traffic issues.
Yeah, you might experience just some more traffic issues because of maybe some blockages or construction that's going on. Also, if you want to stop by and say hey to the Cajun Cannon when the countdown to kickoff takes over at 10 a.m., we are currently set up WWL's booth and the Loge level at Gate B Atrium. We're here in the Caesars Rewards Lounge right in front of the bar area. Nice little view of everything going on and kind of the dome off in the distance there. Can't wait to get into action for that noon kickoff today, coming up with Deuce McAllister, Mike Haas on the call with Jeff on the sideline. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll get into some of our Saints sound as this black and gold squad gets ready for the Carolina Panthers Week 1 NFC South matchup to start the regular season. Don't get much better than that, folks. Want to hear from you? 504-260-187 and the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Be right back after this on WWL Saints Radio. Welcome back into First Take. It's brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Reward destination. And what do you know, Jeff? We are in the Caesars Reward Lounge. Atrium level of Loge. Loge level, Gate B Atrium.
Smells like wealth in here.
Yeah, yes, and I hear you're in the atrium.
Yeah.
Sounds important.
It has to be a nice building if you have any area called the atrium. It has to be a pretty nice building.
Hopefully very nice area will be this offense. Fresh new start with Clint Kubiak taking over. And I know, you know, all the talk of the preseason was you really didn't get to see a lot of what it's capable of. Just because things are kept very bland, very vanilla, you're not really unleashing this true potential of what you're going to see. And I think that's part of the excitement, obviously, going into this regular season. But you could say that, I think, for most teams, obviously, going into the regular deal, is the fact that nobody's showing you much in preseason play.
Yeah, you're seeing, like, the first three pages of the playbook, right?
Just your
like,
base.
Like, very, very simple packages, very vanilla. You're not trying to, you know, especially this year, it seems like DA has been super, super interested in not giving away anything. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter how inconsequential it seems. He's like, you'll find out on Sunday. It's like, okay, what injury is A.T. Perry dealing with? We're going to keep that to ourselves. Oh, where's Clint Kubiak going to call the game from? We'll tell you on Sunday.
I think it's because we were bragging about, you know what? Dennis has been so forthcoming with information. What a change from Sean Payton. He's like, wait a minute, I'm going to have to be more of a, you know, withhold things more from the media so they don't like me too much.
The tinfoil hat person in me wants to think like, hey, maybe it's because he doesn't want to tell us who the backup quarterback is, and to justify that, he's not telling us anything. Because we still don't know who the backup quarterback is. We'll find out today, because I imagine the other guy will be the emergency third quarterback, and you do have to declare a backup quarterback by NFL rules for headset purposes, right? So, like, you have to at least tell them. So you can't play games of like who the backup's going to be, or at least who the second string is going to be. But at this point, we don't know. We'll find out. You know, the inactives haven't come out yet. That's going to be interesting. We can talk about that in a little bit, because they're going to have to make a couple decisions on guys who are inactive, and we don't know yet because it's the week one. But no, it's there's still a lot of questions with what you're going to do, and that's by design.
It's kind of wild that the who the backup to Derek Carr is has turned into such a major storyline. Like it's going to make that huge of a difference for this season.
It's not. It's not. I mean, it's a major storyline because people want anything to be excited about, and people are excited about Spencer Rattler, and I get it. I mean, I'm excited about Spencer Rattler. I think the team's excited about Spencer Rattler. But they also feel like they have a quality player in Jake Haener.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jake's over there with his hands up going, yeah. Hey, don't forget about me.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, they had no commitment to Jake. That's what people need to understand. He played himself into that level of commitment. This offense didn't draft him. If he went out there and didn't show it, they had no reason to be like, yeah, we're going to stick with him just to mess with the fans who are in the Rattler hive, right? You know, they bring their you know their rattlesnake yes. sound makers to the game today or something. I don't know, but no, I mean there's in that. But that's the thing when you have a guy like that people are really excited about, it becomes a very pressure situation for the starting quarterback, especially a guy like Derek Carr who. You know, while I think that he probably got a bad rap last year in terms of how bad his season actually was, I think it was a lot better than people give him credit for.
Agreed.
There's not going to be a ton of leash in terms of the fans of like, hey, you come out and you struggle the way you did in the week 15 game, whatever, the second game of the year last year, where he had like 110 passing yards through the first three quarters. They ended up winning like 28-6. But it was a very close game later into that game than that final score would indicate. And so, you know, if you do that today, you might get boos. Like you might get Rattler chants if you don't come out and you know, perform at a high level, at the level that is expected of your starting quarterback. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. Now, I don't think the team is going to make any decisions based on what this weird hive of people in the stands is yelling. But it's, you know, it could get uncomfortable real quick if things don't go a certain way.
We talked about, you know, right when we started this segment about how the offense hasn't shown us much so far this preseason. And now week one is here, so we're going to see this full Clint Kubiak offense on display. Well, quarterback Derek Carr talked to the media this week, and he was asked, how anxious is he to show just what this offense is capable to do this year?
We're really excited as offense, but it comes at it with a great challenge. You know, this is a defense that, you know, really, you know, well-coached team. Skilled players, talent everywhere, and so it's a tough task. But for us as an offense, we've been working really hard, and so of course we're excited to go out there and play live games, and you know, put the first one out there. Hopefully get a win, and then just keep building on that, and you know, hopefully play good football. So there's been a lot of work that went in to make sure that you know, hopefully we start fast. That's key to us trying to keep the same mindset we had towards the end of the year last year. Treating all these games like do or die, you know, from the jump, and not waiting for a back against the wall type moment to have to do that. So that's the mindset. You know, we're excited. But again, we got to go do it.
Carr touched on it there, obviously talking about those faster starts, but they do want to, you know, start this year kind of, you know, carry over what they did towards the end of the season in 2023 where they were successful. Carr was also asked, how would he describe this year's team?
I know one thing is we're going to play extremely hard and play extremely fast on offense. Our defense looks fantastic. I told you all what I thought of them last year, you know, coming here and practicing against them. And I think they're better this year. Now we all have to go prove it, but they look amazing. They look ready to go. And there's just a mindset and a mentality that we're coming with right now that I recognized, you know, from late in the year last year. Now, does that guarantee us a win? No, nothing guarantees you a win except putting the work in and then doing it on Sunday. But for us, we're excited to go show our brand of football and show what, you know, potentially we can be this year.
Now, Jeff, nobody wants to hear it, obviously, when you're talking about, well, this is a third straight year of Derek having to learn a new offense.
His third straight year. This is like his seventh of the last 12 or 11. Like, he's learned like seven new offenses in his NFL career. It's
whatever. Crazy. Oh, you're an NFL player. This is, you know, you're making millions of dollars. Boo-hoo, you know, kind of thing.
No, I mean, he's got to do it. And, you know, what you can say is he's had to do it before, so he has some experience of, like, how to do it, right? And he has talked about, you know, this offseason in particular, what he's learned over, you know, last year, the year before that, is how to install it in his brain a little faster than maybe it was a few years ago. And he talked about how every day at practice in training camp, he would go out with an assistant beforehand and essentially run the practice. So he was getting, you know, however many, what the, there were – 18 or 28 practices, whatever, in California, he got double that because he was you know, doing it in advance. And he feels like that's going to help him come out faster because he's learned over the years that, hey, I need the reps. I can sit in a classroom and talk it out all day long. I need to go out there and actually physically do it. And that's helped him. So hopefully that manifests, right? Because, again, like I said, there's not going to be a lot of grace given for, well, it's the first couple games in an offense, you got a slow start. No, you're not going to get that. And he knows that. Like, Derek's aware of that. Derek,
absolutely.
Derek's going to be a good sport about it. And I do give him credit for how he handled it. He hears the boos when you're booing him. He hears it. These guys hear it. Like, if they're telling you they aren't aware of it, they're lying to you. They are aware of it.
Especially in today's day and time. It's just everywhere in front of you.
It's about how you handle it, and I think that he did handle. I mean, go look at that Lions game. You think that's an easy situation to be getting booed when you run onto the field and having them cheer when Taysom Hill replaces you? No, but what did he do in that game? He came out and led a comeback. So, give him some credit for that. And, he's a guy that I think – from a mental perspective, does operate at a pretty high level. Like, I think that's why you have him leading this offense. One thing that he talked about is that Clint's offense takes a little bit off his plate in the sense of you're talking about a lot more like pure progressions. Like, he's not going out there and necessarily having to start from scratch with every pre-snap read, every post-snap read. Like, there's a much more stringent idea of where the ball's supposed to go, and if it's not there, you check it down. Like, quick. Like, the decisions are going to be made a lot quicker in this offense because there's a lot less gray area of what's supposed to happen on a particular play, right? Like, either you get it to the fast guy down the field or you get it to the fast guy in the flat or out of the backfield. Like, it's a lot simpler. And you might say, well, why isn't that easier for the defense to defend? Because everything looks the same, right? That's the other element, is the first five steps of every play are going to look the same, whether it's play action, whether it's a run, whether it's a zone, wide zone to the right, whether it's a wide zone to the left, right? And what that makes important is the wide receivers need to be able to block. You need to be able to run the ball with Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed on the field. Just because they're these slider frame guys, you can't take them off the field every time you want to run because that becomes a tell.
Right.
That's what was happening last year. Every time you put Keith Kirkwood on the field, it was like, okay, this is a run play. Or Lynn Bowden, right? You can't do that. Now, Cedric Wilson's going to be a blocking wide receiver, but Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed need to be involved, need to be willing blockers. You don't have to be perfect. I do need you to be a traffic cone. I need you to create a situation where the defensive player cannot run in a straight line to the ball carrier. It's not going to be perfect. You're smaller guys. You're not going to be in an advantage when you're blocking linebackers and defensive ends, right? But you need to get in there. You need to be a willing blocker. And if they can do that and create situations where the defense has to respect the run, even when both of those guys are on the field, this offense will have a much easier time operating out of the play action.
Derek Carr was asked about that 3 straight years now of having to learn a new offense. You kind of summed it up, Jeff, but how does Carr feel about it?
I feel more comfortable starting this time than I did any other time because I was able, through a lot of experience, how do I get ready faster? How do I feel more comfortable faster? One big part of that was reps with my guys. I had a whole year of that under my belt, and so that helps. When you're throwing similar routes, it's not brand new. It doesn't take way too long to figure some things out. Now, there were some new things there's some things and some routes that we were asked to throw and things like that I haven't done before, so I had to get better. We had to get better at that, but for the most part, there was a lot of carryover there. And then I told y'all, like, every practice we had, I would go out before and run the practice myself, with JT and Corey, and, like, we would run the practice. And so I would double up on the reps because it was really I can sit there and study. I can sit there and watch film all day long until I'm blue in the face. But you got to go do it. You got to put your body through the motions. You got to do the footwork. You got to see the routes. You got to see the reads. And that's something that we did. Now I'm going to get, obviously, all these game reps coming up, the season starting and all that, and we're just going to keep getting better at it. But I feel like I'm really comfortable with where we're at going into the season. And I shouldn't say comfortable. I should say confident. I'm confident with where we're at. But now we just got to go do it.
Now we just got to go do it. I think another part of last year too, Jeff, and I don't want to call it a poison pill, but, Michael Thomas has proved, I think, that wasn't the greatest teammate to have around. When things went bad, ended up being more of a disruption, a distraction, instead of someone that would lift the guys around him up.
I mean, I'm not going to speak to what was going on in the locker room. I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what was being said, the conversations that were happening.
But I can speak to what was happening on Twitter.
But, the way that all ended, you can kind of infer that it was not a comfortable scenario throughout the course of the season. And whether you agree with Mike or not, whether you feel like he was in the right, it was not helpful to a locker room.
Right.
You kind of, at a certain point, you all have to be pulling the rope in the same direction, and when someone is not, it becomes clear and it becomes difficult to manage. And I think that did have an impact on this locker room throughout part of that season, and I don't think it's a coincidence that they were playing their best football at the end and Mike wasn't there.
Right.
So, you know, hopefully that is something that, you know, this locker room can be a little more tightly knit. I think that's part of the reason you go out to California.
That bond seems a lot stronger this season.
To get everyone in a room, you know, kind of a hold up in a hotel with nothing to do but to kind of hang out and you know, play cards and go to dinners. And, you know, I think people underestimate that, how that impacts chemistry and how important chemistry can be to a team that is either, you know, in the middle of the pack and wins a lot of close games, or is in the middle of the pack and loses a lot of close games, right? And that's, you know, like, people always want to talk about, you want to talk about, okay, this team is bad, this team is good. In the NFL, the difference between the second best team and the second worst team is really razor thin. Like, it's really not that big of a gap, right? You're talking about a 9-8 team. If things go a certain way, they could have won 11, 12 games, right? Like, they were in games that they could have won. All the games that they could have swung that, they lost, right? Think of what close games that came down to the wire did the Saints win. They were either ahead and won the games that they were in control of, or they were in close games that they lost, or they were behind the whole time and they lost. They didn't win any close games, and that's the difference between winning double-digit games, hosting a playoff game, giving yourself a chance, versus having to sit there on week 18 and hope tiebreakers go your way. So, you know, I think chemistry is what this team is hoping can help swing things in a certain direction. And, you know, from, you know, and here's the thing. Everyone's going to say the right things at this time of year. I don't think that hearing them talk about how great their locker room feels and the chemistry and everything really means anything, because that's the same things we were hearing this time last year, and it didn't go the way you would hoped. That said, I do think that they've kind of dialed things in a little more. And hopefully that does manifest. One thing that has happened this year that didn't really happen last year is they've been doing a lot of offensive team dinners. They've done at least two of them at Derek's house.
Okay. Right?
All the offensive players, or at least the majority of them, get together at Derek's house, and they hang out and they kind of bond and whatever. And you might kind of roll your eyes at that and say, oh, yeah, okay, you know. But at the same time, like, I think that is something that they are conscious of, that they are working on. And hopefully that does manifest into more success.
Yeah, we've heard a lot from folks, too. It's like, you got to care about the guy next to you.
Yeah, it matters.
That
it,
helps
it does
playing
matter.
Harder for them.
It does.
Not just for yourself.
Yeah.
With the Saints, too, I think a big factor is to getting this, you know, Saints fan base really swayed back on their side is just, you know, hearing from guys like the leaders in this team, like a DeMario Davis, a Tyrann Mathieu, saying that Derek Carr is that guy. Head coach Dennis Allen is that guy, because there is so whatever doubt that seems to surround the quarterback and head coach of this team so much.
They're committed to both those guys, right? And, you know, whether the fan base is another question, but this team is committed to this team. Like, this idea that they're going to go out there without any confidence that they're going to win is completely an idea. In that locker room, the vibes are completely different from what you'll watch ESPN, and they'll give you their power rankings. That doesn't matter to anyone in this building. And if anything, that's a scenario I want to be in. I want to be the coach.
Don't see him coming.
I want to be the coach that can go in there and say, no one believes in you but the people in this room, because that's the easiest pregame speech you'll ever be able to give. You know how much harder it is to motivate the team where it's like, everyone thinks you're the best. Go prove them right. You think that's really getting people going? No. So, you know, I think it's a lot easier for a team to really get motivated, get up for a season where they're not getting any, and no one's giving them a chance.
Want to hear from you in the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line as we get ready for a noon kickoff here in the Caesars Superdome. Also, the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff coming up at 10 a.m. with the Cajun Cannon joining us here at the Gate B Loge Level Atrium inside the Superdome. Give us your shout-out. What are you doing on game day? What are you expecting from this Saints squad? And we'll be back with more First Take right after the break here on WWL after this. Yes, indeed. Welcome into First Take. Want to mention Seaside Cruises, the New Orleans Saints partner with Seaside Events to provide the Saints Nation with the ultimate fan experience. That's mingling with Saints legends during the inaugural Saints Legends Fan Cruise. Make sure you check out Seaside Events for that Seaside Cruise from the Black and Gold. Getting into our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. And first up, our good buddy Jimmy. Jimmy, what you got for us today on this wonderful game day, man?
Hey, man, look, football's back. I'm dragging a little butt right now. Listen, I'm trying to pull off the rare triple play. All right, now follow me here. I went to the Tulane game yesterday at 11 a.m. against Kansas State. It was a great game. The referees in Las Vegas kind of to me, kind of lost the game for Tulane, but we'll leave it at that. I then went up to Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Full of Wild Wings feeling, didn't it?
Yeah, it was weird, dude. I'll just leave it at that. You know, a couple missed calls at the PI at the end. They should have called a flag on, but whatever. Vegas has a big influence on these games. I hate to say it, but that's the reality. There's a lot of gambling on the line. But look, let me tell you, triple play in action here. Went to that game, drove up to Hattiesburg, saw SLU Lions from Hammond, Louisiana play my Southern Miss Golden Eagles. Southern Miss won. Came home, and I'm going back to the Dome today. So three games in one weekend, about to get the coffee going. Yeah, I've never done three games in one weekend, so hopefully, we're one for two. I had hoped Tulane would win, but I think the Saints are going to win today. Carolina always gives them a hard time. You know, tickets are still only like $15 right now on the secondary market, okay? And the only reason I say that is, you know, we have the golden era with Drew Brees and Sean Payton, and we know that when the Eagles come to town, that's going to be a big draw because the Eagles fans are coming. And we know the Sean Payton return game is going to be packed out because a lot of Saints fans want to be there just to either boo him or whatever they want to do. But I want to get your take on the fact that the price is so low. Does that mean, you know, obviously that means we're going to have a couple empty seats. But we always play Carolina tough, or namely they play us tough. And it's funny because I hear Saints fans say, you know, we're not that good, but Carolina is really bad. But I got to remind everybody that every player in the NFL is good, right? They were all Big Ten, all big whatever, SEC this, SEC that. Carolina always gives us a hard time. I think it's going to be really, really close. And, again, if you're looking for a cheap ticket, this is about the cheapest ticket you'll see for an opening season regular season home game I've seen in a long time. Almost, I feel like, since the Jim Haslett era, you know. So I want to get your take on that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think there's a lot of, you know, cautious optimism going on right now. I think, and the way I phrased it for this game, there's really no upside for the Saints in this game. And that's the dangerous part of this game is that if you win it by 30, everyone's going to be like, great, congratulations, that's the free space in bingo, move on and see what you can do against
the
Cowboys.
What you should have done, right.
Right. If you play a close game, everyone's going to be like, well, that's where the Saints are. They can't even beat a 2-win team easily. And then if you lose this game by any margin, it's going to be the sky's falling, change everything. You know, we're not going to wait till week two. Everything needs to change right now, or at least, you know, I'm not saying the team will react that way, but the mood around the team will be that way. So, now you got to go out and win this game. It's the closest thing to a must-win week one game I think I've ever seen. That said, I think looking at the Panthers and seeing a team that can't go out and win a game is false. Any NFL team can win a game any week. I don't know how many times we have to see it and explain that before people start to understand that's true. There's no such thing as an easy win in the NFL. The margin between the best and worst team is as close as it is in any sport. So we'll see. Again, like I mentioned, the Ejiro Evero, which I finally figured out how to say his name correctly.
That's impressive,
after a year. His defense prides itself on making you go the long way, making you execute long drives. And because of that, you're going to have low-scoring games. Now, if you can create some turnovers, if you can generate some points on defense or on special teams, then you can start to go away in that game. Like, look at what happened in that second game last year. It was close. Then you had a couple turnovers. You created some havoc on the defensive side of the ball, and that allowed for some short possessions, a couple late touchdowns that really put that game out of reach. But that's what you got to do. You got to muck things up against this team because they're going to force you to go underneath, execute, and their gamble is that you're not going to be able to do that enough times to, take over a game.
Hope you folks out there are like Jimmy and headed to today's game. Want to see all the great Hoodats out there stopping by. Team WWL set up thanks to Luke and Ashley at the Loge level. Gate B Atrium. First take goes till 10 a.m. That's when the Cajun Cannon Bobby Hebert takes over with the countdown to kickoff. Leading up to game time, high noon with Jeff Nowak on the sideline along with Mike Haas. and Deuce McAllister on the call of the game, the local call of the game. Make sure you turn down your TVs and turn up the sound of WWL Saints Radio. We'll be back with First Take right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. We're battling the Panthers today in the Caesars Superdome, week one, game one. We are here till 10 a.m. Then the Cajun Cannon will take out over on the Bud Light Countdown to kickoff inside the dome, Loge Level Gate B Atrium. That's presented by Craig's Electrical Generator Service. Shout out to Craig, who will also be joining us on that countdown to kickoff. And then high noon, game time. Deuce McAllister, Mike Haas, and my man right here, Jeff Nowak. You know the tradition, folks. I mentioned, turn down the TVs and listen to Deuce and Haas along with Jeff. Then after the game, he can sound off with the Cajun Cannon on the Ciroc Point after. We got 10 hours of wall-to-wall Saints football today that starts 8 a.m. already here on WWL Saints Radio, AMFM.com, and the free Odyssey app. We're kind of like the NFL Network of New Orleans, I feel like, for all black and gold fans. We are just here for you to give you constant coverage of the team that you love. And I say it all the time, and it's not just because I'm a part of it, Jeff. Why not tune into the local station? Because it's a team that's, you know, the guys that are constantly around this ball club and that know them best.
I always get a kick out of when I run into people I don't talk to every day, and they're like, I was mowing the lawn, and I heard you. I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. They don't even realize I'm on the sideline because I don't talk about it all the time. And they were just like, yeah. I was like, this guy sounds familiar. And I'm like, oh, okay. Anyway. But no, yeah, listen. And that's what you should do. Yeah. You're here now. Why aren't you here then?
For sure. One more hour. First Take coming up. We'll get into some more of our sound. Cam Jordan, Juwan Johnson, Clint Kubiak. Also, Believe in Panthers podcast host Des Johnson gives us a little inside on Carolina. Coming back with more First Take after the break here on WWL.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Welcome on in. Sunday, September 8th is here, the long-awaited week one return of the black and gold. And what do you know? It is a home opener to start the season. Welcome in those kitty cats from Carolina to the Superdome. The Panthers, always a pesky bunch, though, as we know, dealing with them over the years. This will be the one of two matchups against there. Steve Geller, along with Jeff Nowak, bringing you to 10 o'clock. That's when the countdown to kickoff will take over with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert in tow. And Jeff, loved this message this morning from another Jeff on 0809 on our text line. I'm mowing the lawn right now. Y'all are awesome. Stay local. Listen local. Could not agree more with that statement.
Yeah, that totally wasn't me. I definitely wasn't
the
guy texting.
Man, you texted into our line here.
I think, no, he's saying for Jeff, not from Jeff.
Oh, jeez. I got you. Okay.
Gosh, Steve.
No, that was for Jeff. Yes,
yeah.
That's what Cullen just typed into the message box.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, listeners. But yeah, it's lawn mowing time, right? It's 9 a.m. It's not hot yet. Although it's been kind of cool. Anyway,
we got that cool front coming in.
Yeah, this is a tangent. We are off topic. We're here to talk about football.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Although I am sponsored by John Deere Tractors.
Wow, congratulations.
That's a lie.
Looking at this matchup, Jeff, obviously the biggest, I think, talking point is how is this Saints offense going to look? A new scheme that we haven't seen around, obviously, for quite some years with the Sean Payton / Pete Carmichael regime way of things, you know, going on now. We've got Clint Kubiak in a new system, and I think the biggest question is really not the scheme. It's talking about the offensive line, and one of those questions is the development, or the stalled development at least, of a guy like Trevor Penning. Well, new offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak was asked this week about Trevor and asked exactly how is the young tackle progressing.
He's doing everything we've asked him to do. He's a super coachable guy, and you know, he's had some really good practices, and he's in the a lot can be said about where he started and where he's come from. And, you know, I'm really proud to get to coach Trevor and Rick Dennison and John Benton. And those guys have done a phenomenal job with him and with the whole offensive line. But, you know, he's earned the right to go out there and play really well on Sunday. And I'm looking forward to, you know, going and seeing what he does. But it's a five-man show up there, and it's all five working together. It's not just him.
five-man show indeed. And, yeah, hopefully we're seeing Trevor mowing down some defensive linemen.
I see what you did there. No, and you know, if you've listened to Clint talk, Clint's not the most vociferous, emotional press conference giver in the world. So
he's
to
like,
me,
good, they won't ask for me anymore.
To me, that's like a 10 answer for him in terms of, like, emotion. So, I do feel, you know, it's funny. When he said that, kind of my ears perked up because, you know, I think that's something that this team has made a point of is – we're going to stand behind Trevor. We're going to kind of gas the guy up. We're going to give him opportunities. We're not going to have him going out there feeling like any mistake you make is going to have the, you know, the rug pulled out from under you, right? And they did have that week prior to the, you know, the preseason finale where you had Oli Udo getting first team reps. They were splitting first team reps. I don't think that was ever really a competition so much as it was, hey, if we do need to change course, we want to make sure that Oli has at least some idea of what a first team rep with the first team
right.
or at right tackle would look like. But no, I think that that's been a big point of this offseason is not just developing Trevor Penning. It's to have a young player go out there with confidence. And he would be the first one to admit. And I talked to him in the locker room this week, and he admitted like that first preseason game, the game against the Cardinals, he was hesitant. He was tentative. He was not attacking with his hands. He was waiting. And it's something that, you know, y'all saw it. He saw it too. The coaches saw it too. And that's been something that, you know, he's been working on improving. And I kind of asked him, it's like, okay, how do you fix that? Because it's like, you know what you're supposed to do. It's just a matter of going out there and doing it. And he said, yeah, it's just about being aggressive, just about being mean out there and being the one who to initiate the action, be the one to redirect the defensive end, not the other way around. You can't allow the defensive player to dictate everything that's happening on every play. Like, if he's a big, strong guy. If he can just get his hands on a guy, he's going to have the advantage. Now, when he struggles, it's because he never gets his hands on him. He either waits too long and gets burned inside.
Right.
He sets too far outside, then gets bull rushed, right? But when he can get his hands on the guys in the interior of the guy's pads and navigate that way, he has the advantage. He's a giant human being. He's an incredibly strong human being. He's going to be stronger than any defensive end he goes against in that matchup. Well, Jadeveon Clowney is probably a bad example because Jadeveon Clowney might be the strongest person on the planet. I remember stories about him at South Carolina where the coaches were getting on him for not taking his lifting seriously. So he like went in there just like without any warm-up and set their deadlift record. Like, I don't even know if it was deadlift.
Mic drop.
It was some sort of like lifting record. And it was just like, no, I am that dude. So maybe Jadeveon Clowney might have a strength advantage. I don't know. But either way, you know, I think that I'm hopeful for Trevor. You know, I think he gets a lot of grief, and rightfully so. He's a first-round pick. When you're a first-round pick, you've all that criticism is earned. You know, all that criticism is always going to be there, and you know it. But I do think his approach is what it needs to be, and hopefully he can go out there and continue to improve. He's not going to be perfect. The coaching staff knows he's not going to be perfect. You're going to need to send help his way. You're going to need to chip with tight ends and linebackers. Running backs. But, you know, I just need him to play neutral a majority of the time. And we've talked a lot about this. Like, you're not going out there as an offensive lineman with the goal of I have to win 100% of my reps. It is, I need to play a majority of my reps neutral. I need to win clean some of the time, and I need to limit the number of times that I lose and it impacts the play. You can lose in such a way that, you know, the defensive end never gets there. We never talk about it. No one's watching the defensive end who almost got to the quarterback. We're watching the ball. We're watching the result of the play. So we'll see how that goes. But I think Trevor there was a scenario where Trevor gets to the week 3 of the preseason and that job is already gone. You've already decided to move on. He made the improvements to hold on to that job, and now it's a matter of, okay, we need you to play at such a level that you can keep that job.
Yeah, looking at the other side of the ball, obviously, you know, you kind of talked about there's not been much, you know, yapping about a rookie, you know, starting on this offensive line, your first-round pick, but also right next to him at that guard spot on the left side, kind of some indecision there, and I know Lucas Patrick is your guy right now, but hoping that we can see more development from someone like Nick Saldiveri, obviously. Good to see him getting back in the flow here.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really talked about the game day elevations yet, but the Saints elevated linebacker Kalik Hudson and defensive tackle Kendall Vickers, which means they're going to have 3 players inactive after the injured players. So you have to have you can only have 48 active players on game day. They have 4 players who are already ruled out, which is defensive tackle Colin Saunders, tight end Dallin Hulker, and then linebackers DeMarco Jackson and the rookie Jalen Ford. So they're going with the two elevations, that means you have to have three more players inactive. I expect one of those players is going to be the backup quarterback, with that second, that third guy being the emergency third quarterback who doesn't count against your active roster spots. So you're going to have two more players inactive. I imagine one of those is going to be John Ridgeway, just because he just got here.
Yeah.
And then maybe a wide receiver. But what they didn't do is elevate a offensive lineman, which is surprising to me, because Nick Saldivari just got back to practice this week. But not elevating a lineman, not elevating, say, Shane Lemieux, who would have been my guess, means that they're clearly comfortable going into this game with Nick Saldivari as the backup. If Lucas Patrick or Eric McCoy gets hurt, that would probably get Nick Saldivari in the game. So they clearly feel comfortable that he could at least play in a backup capacity if they need him. So that's a good sign. I don't think that you're really looking at him as the starter right now, but he was the guy that you went into camp thinking, I think, you know, he's got the inside track to win that starting job. So if Lucas struggles, maybe he is a guy you turn to. But either way, it's a good sign for him, because he missed a lot of time with that calf injury. And you had to wonder, okay, where is he? I don't think that you're going to go into this game with seven active offensive linemen.
Yeah.
And if you were concerned that he couldn't play, you were going to have to elevate somebody. So that's a good sign, because right now their backups are Landon Young, Oli Udoh, and Nick Saldivari. That's it. They only have eight.
Interesting, right, to see how that ends up panning out. I wonder if even do you try to get some reps for Nick Saldivari in this game today, even if Lucas Patrick is not struggling, but you want to give him like a blow, a breather at some time during the match.
You don't typically do that with the offensive line. Like,
I know you want that continuity.
Yeah, you don't typically see rest downs. Like, you don't see, you know, offensive linemen coming out for, you know, a defensive end who rushes six times in a row. You'll rotate him out just to get a breather on a long drive. You don't really do that with the offensive line, so I don't think that's going to happen unless there's an injury. My question, and we haven't really seen a lot of it, who's the jumbo lineman? Who's the jumbo tight end? They haven't really done much of it at all in the preseason games. I think we got one rep, and it was Landon Young. So he would be my guess, is if you do run jumbo.
Right, you've seen it from him. So,
you send Landon Young out there. But I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's somebody else and we're not seeing. But with only eight active offensive linemen, I don't know. The backup situation is kind of murky. Like, okay, so Oli Udoh will be your backup right tackle, right? That makes sense, because he's been getting reps there. Landon Young will be your backup left tackle. Lucas Patrick will be your backup center. Nick Saldivari is your backup left guard. And then they would swap. If Eric McCoy went out, I imagine you would send Nick Saldivari in at left guard and Lucas Patrick in at center. But who's your backup right guard? I genuinely don't know. It's probably one of Landon Young or Oli Udoh. We've never seen Nick Saldivari play right guard.
Right.
I'm sure he can, but you would think, hey, you would want to get reps for that guy. I haven't seen Lucas Patrick play the right guard, so I'm not sure about that. I would guess it's Oli Udoh because he's already on the right side, but that's they're definitely putting a lot of faith in the guys they have out there, because you know, you get a couple injuries at the offensive line, and suddenly it's like, man, hopefully we make it through this game.
Unofficial depth chart, obviously the Saints have Landon Young as the backup right guard to Caesar.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, and I mean the depth chart doesn't really mean a ton.
Exactly.
But either way, you're asking a tackle to bump inside and play guard, because both of those guys are tackles by trade.
What we're going to do is take a break. When we get back, we'll get a little bit of insight on these Carolina Panthers. Believe in Panthers podcast host Des Johnson joined me and my co-host here, Jeff Nowak, on the Inside Black and Gold podcast. Got some bites on him, as we'll hear about those kitty cats when we return right here on WWL Saints Radio after the break. So stay tuned right here on WWL. Who dat? Welcome back into First Take. A little more life coming into this Caesars Superdome as they get ready for that noon kickoff between the Saints and Carolina Panthers. Team WWL, our booth is set on the Loge level, Gate B atrium. The Cajun Cannon will be by shortly as the Bud Light countdown to kickoff starts 10 a.m.
Yeah, it looks like they're stocking up on some Bloody Mary mix over here. So let's
get ready for the real crew, him and Craig showing up.
Get those beans happening.
Exactly. Jeff, when you look at some of the things from this Carolina Panthers squad, I think one of the big additions, obviously, new head coach, but one of the first things I felt like they did was invest heavily in that offensive line after you saw, I think, Bryce Young get sacked, 61 times last year. The poor young guy never really had a chance. And I believe in podcast host Des Johnson joined us, and he talked about the additions of Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt to that Panthers O-line.
those are big men. Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt are they are gigantic. They are space eaters. And when you can make Austin Corbett, who's moved to center, when you can make him look little, because Austin Corbett's not a small man, you've done something. And they've paid over $100 million for these two guys. So that was their core. That was their first two signings. When Canales came in and Morgan became the GM, they wanted to fix the defensive line. They wanted to fix the offensive line and build from within. And that's exactly what they've done. You guys would know, being Saints guys, the best years of your offensive line is when you had Drew Brees and you had those two all-pro guards and a center in front of him to solidify that front so he could actually build that pocket. Bryce didn't have that last year. He was getting linemen getting shoved into that pocket, and he didn't really know where to go with the ball after the fact. It's coming out faster. Canales is preaching 2.7 or less, and from what we've seen so far from Bryce, he's really adapted that. Bryce is starting to do stuff like anticipate windows and stuff that you would expect from a top quarterback coming into the league. He's throwing the spots. He's not throwing. Last year he was throwing the players and they weren't open, so separation was an issue. This year he's throwing the spots. And when they played Buffalo in preseason week three, we got a chance to see the starters for a drive, and they went down and scored a touchdown. And it was a mix of run, pass. It was amazing as a Panther fan and reporter to see some pass plays from the Panthers a couple weeks ago where the wide receivers were wide open. Like they were open. Like we weren't used to seeing that, where there's no one in the frame. It's just Adam Thielen, like in the middle of the field, and there's no one there, and he's got room to run. It's like it looks easy again. It looked hard last year for Carolina to just get down the field to be able to kick a field goal. That's not going to be the instance this year. Like it's Carolina. I really feel like, I'm not, it's going to sound like a homer, but I feel like Carolina is the one that can have that Houston leap this year. Wow. From 2-15 to middle of the pack, or even this division's weird. Like even nine wins could probably win the NFC South. So you go 5-1 or 4-2, or whatever in the division, you kind of set yourself up for maybe hosting a playoff game. Like it's wild, but it's not out of reach. Again, Houston did this last year. And just really, if you think 18 months before that, we were talking about how Houston was a wasteland. Nobody wanted to go to Houston, like with the stuff with the owner and Deshaun Watson and everything else. Now they're getting picked as a Super Bowl contender, like literally 2 years later. Like, so things can change really fast in the NFL. And if you already have a number one overall pick at quarterback in his second year and a support system around him, we're just starting a year later than we should have with the Bryce Young experiment, in my opinion.
Love hearing from Des Johnson, the Believe in Panthers podcast, which he does with former NFL running back Jonathan Stewart.
I'd like him to narrate my life.
Right. Sounds fantastic. Maybe a little homerism there, thinking that Panthers can make that,
this is homer,
you know,
season,
Houston
baby.
Texans leap. But I think that because of what the Texans did last year with C.J. Stroud and a young quarterback, there is that hope for teams in that rebuild mode that things can come together a lot more quickly. And I think, obviously, when you address that offensive line and you hear them him talking about how the Saints basically copied that Saints model of getting those, you know, those guards to protect that shorter in stature quarterback to help them in the pocket, might be a big bonus to Bryce Young. And I'll be interested to see if the Saints defense, the pass rush, is able to exploit that at all.
No, I mean, that was a very important thing for Drew during his career, was to be able to, like, that the interior of the pocket, right? When you're not a mobile guy, you need to be able to step up into throws. You need to be able to kind of create that bubble. And that's what they were able to do with Jari and Carl Nix, I think.
Right.
And, you know, like that was a big part of Drew's success, especially early in his career, was keeping him clean in that pocket, because you're 6 feet tall. You know, you're a poor man's 6 feet, which means I think Drew was more like 5'11". But whatever. like Bryce Young is a poor man's 5'10". Right? So, like, that's even more important for Bryce. And, no, I mean, that's the smart thing to do. The Giants did the same thing, right? Like, the Giants were like, okay, we got to see what we have in this guy. And the only way you can see what you have is to at least give him some help. Give him a line. Give him a receiver that he can throw to. That's what the Panthers did. They went out and got Xavier Leggett. They went out and got Deontay Johnson. They paid a bunch of money on the interior of that offensive line. The Giants did the same thing. They went out and got Malik Nabers. They signed Runyon, John Runyon Jr., or the new
Junior,
Runyon.
Right.
The new Runyon. I remember the old Runyon because he and Michael Strahan used to go at it all the time.
Right.
And then the, you know, Illuminor, I think, for the Giants. So, you know, like, that's when you were trying to figure out whether you have a guy at a quarterback, at the quarterback position, you can't constantly be undercutting his ability to have success and then be like, well, you know, he just didn't have it. Like, no, you are a part of this. You are an equal part of this conversation. So we'll see how that goes for him. But I think he is in a much better situation this year than he was last year. And the Frank Reich, you know,
one thing
that I tell people all the time, and, you know, the Panthers are a perfect example of, like, everyone's like, okay, anybody but DA. It's you know, you could hire anybody and you would be happy. I promise you.
Be careful what you wear.
It can and very much will in certain situations get worse. And that's what happened in Carolina. Like, they were like, they ran Matt Rhule out of town, and then they were like, oh, Frank Reich, he can't possibly be worse than Matt Rhule. And then by week 11, you had the special teams coordinator as your head coach. You're like, oh, okay, it got worse. You're right. And then you go into this year and you have the number one overall pick and you're not even the team making it. Wow. It can always get worse. But no, I think I am curious to see Bryce, because I like Bryce. I think everyone's quit on Bryce already because he's the number one pick.
I knew he shouldn't have been.
Yeah, and so, you know, I think Bryce is gonna surprise some people this year, but I don't know about that Texans turnaround. I don't think that's, you know, every year there seems to be one team that does that. I don't know if it's going to be the Panthers, but even, like, from the Panthers' perspective, you won two games last year. If you go out and you win six or seven games and you're in
massive
the conversation
yeah.
for the NFC South, you know, throughout the majority of the season, that's a success. That's a big improvement. So from that perspective, I do think they have the ability to turn things around from where they were. I think, you know, 10 wins and a playoff berth is a little outside of the likely scenarios here. But I'm not going to begrudge anyone for being a homer in week zero. Right?
And having that hope.
Like, you should have. Like, that's the time you should be talking about what if things go right? What will have to happen?
Yeah.
Not, here's all the things that I think are going to be terrible. Like, who does that benefit?
looking at the new addition here at head coach, we asked Dez Johnson about new head coach Dave Canales, what he brings to this Panthers punch.
He is that type of personality that doesn't need an alarm clock. Like, he literally is the type that wakes up on his own, like, every morning, because his mind just can't wait to start off his day in his world. Like, he's that positive. And in the very beginning, it kind of came off like, there's no way this dude could be this positive all the time. But he is. He really is. Like, that's him. And he's a player's coach. The players adore him. They love him. They will run through a wall from him. And the difference with him, we were talking about this on Believe in Panthers Tuesday. Dave Canales, his coaching style is different than, say, like a Bill Belichick or the old guard, where it was like tough love type stuff. Dave is the type where he will tell you, this is the drill we're running today. This is why we're running the drill. And this is what we're going to achieve by completing this drill. Like, he'll explain to the players why they're doing something, as opposed to just doing it and trust me, this is going to work if we do it right. And it gives the players ownership, and the players, especially the veterans, they love the fact that, okay, so we're going to do this Oklahoma drill, whatever. Why? Oh, that's why we're doing it. Or we're going to do this 2-minute drill in the red zone today. Why? That's why we're doing, like, and they're getting that explanation. So Dave is I'd call him one of these new breed coaches, the one of the younger coaches, like a Sean McVay or a Mike McDonald or someone that's kind of doing it a little different than their predecessors would have. And it's a little jarring here in Carolina because we're used to having defensive guys be our coach really throughout our entire history, from Dom Capers all the way down to Ron Rivera. The formula here has typically been defense with a defensive head at front. So your offense is a bit conservative. With Dave, it sounds like it's going to be kind of still the same, but a little bit flipped, where they are going to be very heavy on the run. He's mentioned that so many times now, and I do believe him on that. Finally, a coach here is like, we're going to run the ball, and they're actually going to run it, which will help protect Bryce. Bryce is going to become this guru at this quick, almost West Coast offense type of passing game. The key is to get the ball out to your guys in spots and basically conduct the offense. Bryce can do that. He can do that. He won a Heisman doing that. So that's not a problem. They've got two capable running backs. I'm really interested in seeing Miles Sanders in this offense, because they paid him $25 million, and he was just kind of lost in the sauce last year. Yeah. But now we know why he was. Plus, we mentioned on Believe in Panthers at the end of the preseason last year, Miles had a hip injury and went into the season with it and never was 100%. So people piled onto him because of the amount of money that he was getting paid. But the situation just didn't lend itself to help Miles Sanders. And now, with a new regime coming in, I feel like Dave Canales kind of looked at the running back room and was like, oh, Miles Sanders is here. Miles Sanders is a great running back. We can use it. Oh, Chuba Hubbard's here. He almost rushed for 1,000 yards. You have stuff here. Like, we don't have to go rushing out. But let's just go get Jonathan Brooks in the second round, just in case, you know, just to kind of round it out. Like, they've thought of everything. And it's weird, as a Panther fan for 30-plus years, it's only happened a couple of times where the regime kind of figures it out and you're like, oh, okay, this might work. And we get it before the nation does. And by the time the nation catches up, they're 7-1 or 8-0. Like, where'd Carolina come from? Like, yeah. We were kind of seeing all this happen, but it doesn't happen frequently. So when it does happen, people are so shocked that Carolina's doing this. But I sense the same thing I sense when Rivera was first here. It took Rivera a little longer to get it going, but same situation. You got a number one overall pick here. You're having to build around him. How are you going to build your offense? How are you going to build this defense to support that? It's the exact same situation. Bryce is just a half a foot shorter.
Yeah, something that Dez mentioned there about the Panthers was the running game. And that was one question I have, too, coming into this season is, what can we expect from a guy like Miles Sanders, who really kind of disappeared last year and people were considering him washed already at age 27?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, when you talk about, okay, why did Bryce Young get sacked 61 times, 62 times? Why did that offense struggle as much as it did? Well, when you can't run the ball, nothing good is going to happen for you. And, you know, they didn't have the weapons for Bryce last year. They didn't have the protection. So, yeah, I think they are going to try to establish the run today. And the Saints are going to have to hold up. Because if you can get the Panthers into passing situations, the Saints have the advantage. You can get Chase Young on the field. You can bump Cam Jordan into that NASCAR package and really get after him. If you're constantly in third and short, you can't do that. You can't take advantage of your pass rushers because, you know, you gotta protect the run. And, you know, the Saints are without Colin Saunders today. That's really his forte. He's a run stuffer. He's a run downs defensive tackle. So you're going to have to rely on Brian Brzee probably on the early downs. You're going to have to, you know, Kendall Vickers is probably the guy. I would imagine John Ridgeway will be inactive. I think A.T. Perry will be inactive with that injured hand. And you're going to have to pick somebody else. I don't know. I don't think you go into it with five defensive tackles. So we'll have to see how that all plays out. But someone's going to have to step up and be that run-stuffing defensive tackle because the Panthers are going to try to protect Bryce by establishing the run.
Looking at the Panthers' passing attack, too, you really just had a guy in, you know, Adam Thielen a year ago. They obviously upgraded with adding Deontay Johnson, right, and then drafting Xavier Leggett. And, you know, from a fan point of view, I hate to see a guy like Leggett ending on the Panthers just because I like his personality. I like the talent level there. But obviously he becomes now, you know, black and gold enemy, public enemy number one on their side. But a really fun interview all the time from him. And just you see the joy of playing football when you talk to Xavier Leggett.
He's got that South Carolina accent. I throw him with a deep ball, man. But, you know, he's a fun guy. And seriously, listen to him talk. That accent is fantastic. Very much a South Carolina guy.
Definitely.
South Carolina boy. But, you know, before we, you know, we're not going to talk a ton more about the Panthers the rest of the way. I do want to mention Derek Brown is crazy. He had 103 tackles last season. Think about it. He's a defensive tackle, or at least a defensive end in a 3-4, which is a defensive tackle, right? The next highest tackle, that's an NFL record. He set an NFL record for tackles at the defensive line position. Not just defensive tackles, defensive ends, too. The next highest total for a defensive lineman after that last year was Harrison Phillips from the Vikings. He had 92 tackles. Pete Werner had 93 tackles. He's a linebacker. That's nuts. And part of that is, hey, you know, teams are trying to run the ball on you. The Panthers were terrible against the run.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's getting a lot of opportunities. But he's a big boy. He's going to be involved in that action. And the Saints are going to have to figure that out. You're going to have to double team that guy. Like, you cannot just sit there and say, okay, whoever is lined up over him, you take care of him. You know, Eric McCoy, you take him one-on-one. No. You do not want to be in one-on-one matchups with Derek Brown.
Speaking of defensive tackles, a guy we love here is Cam Jordan, who will be seeing some time moving inside this season. We'll hear from him on some cuts when we get back from the break. Talking a little more black and gold, of course, now switching gears from our little Panthers preview to back into Saints talk. Want to hear from you, Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line 504-260-1870. Kicking off things here in the Superdome, high noon. Mike Hawes, Deuce McAllister on the call. We'll be having the Bud Light countdown to kickoff coming up at 10 a.m. with the Cajun Cannon after First Take ends. Well, first, we're going to take a break and be back with more right after this on WWL Saints Radio. Who dat? Welcome back into First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Hanging out here in the Superdome as we get ready for that noon kickoff between the Saints and the Carolina Panthers. Well, team's getting going. NFC South showdown right off the bat to start the season. And you would think, you know, maybe the the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Atlanta Falcons be squaring off too, but that's not the case. We just have the only in-division rivalry matchup in week one.
Yeah, and the Saints get, like, most of their division games out of the way by, like, week 10.
Yeah.
So, you know, these
usually
early,
they close them out, right?
Yeah, I mean, these games are important, man. Like, you gotta win these games, especially, you know, you look at, okay, what's happened the last 3 years? You know, they've missed the playoffs 2 out of 3 years. Twice, two of those times, they went 9-8 and missed the playoffs in week 18 on a tiebreaker. You know why that happens? Because these NFC matchups and these NFC South matchups in particular, you don't take advantage of them early in the season and they come back to bite you. The Saints went 4-2 in the division last year. Like, you should be, man, if you can go 4-2 in your division, you should be happy about it.
You set yourself up for success, yeah.
Yeah, you got to sweep one of those teams. I know Bobby's talking about this. You got to sweep one of those teams, right? And you got to go 1-1 against the other two. And the Panthers have to be the team you look at and say, well, the Saints should sweep them. Right, and so if you can't sweep the Panthers, then you got to sweep somebody else to go 4-2. Because 3-3, that's not good enough. Not if you want to win the division. If you're trying to sneak, if you're trying to backdoor into the playoffs, you can be like, all right, fine, we'll try to win the. You know, hopefully we can have a good record in the NFC and sneak in past a team like the Packers last year, right? But you got to go beat those teams head to head,
right?
And that's what the Saints didn't do. So that's what these games are. You know, you gotta play well. You know, like, that's the frustrating thing is, like, losing a game that you played well, it's frustrating, but you can at least take positives out of that. Losing a game because you came out flat and were down 10 at halftime and then couldn't make the comeback, which happened at least 3 times last year, maybe 4. You know, those are the games where you look at, and that's when I understand why people are frustrated with the quarterback and the head coach, because that's where you expect, okay, the quarterback is a veteran quarterback, got to come out hot. You got to come out playing well, not work your way into a game like a rookie quarterback. So that's what we'll see today. Well, that's what, if the fans leave happy today, it's going to be because that's not what happened, or that's what happened is Derek Carr came out and played well, and the Saints took advantage of what should be an overmatched opponent.
Looking at the defensive side of the ball, obviously the biggest strength everybody feels is this Saints squad. And a key piece on that, the old man in Cam Jordan, love talking to him, hear what he has to say, very vocal, great personality. Well, he's entering, you know, everyone's going to feel old here because I certainly do, year 14 for Cam. Does he get as excited for these games even though it is week 14? What's it like for him?
I'm like a little kid today. It's like, you know, the hard work you put in through training camp, being away from the fam, focusing in on honing the craft. You do all that to get to game week. You know, at the final preseason game, you're just like, get me to week one. We're in week one now. So it's a good place to be in. I think we got phenomenal talent on the team. I think we have great leaders on the team. I think we have great players on this team. And all we have to do is realize our greater potential and go capitalize.
Cam also was asked early on, what is the challenge of this Panthers offense?
Darn near a whole new offensive line, for sure. New OC, everything's sort of different. And at the same time, it's about us. So we got to go ahead and play our calls. We have to play our techniques. We have to focus on what we know we can be successful at.
You got a lot of different players coming into that mix, and he mentioned a new offensive coordinator for the Panthers. So Cam was asked, you know, you really don't know what to expect from Carolina, even though they are an NFC South familiar opponent.
Carolina's revamped their whole offense. You know, we'll see what changes have been made when we get in the game. The great thing about week one is you're so full of energy, you can't wait to hit the field. The worst part about week one is there's no such thing as like a true game plan because you're expecting to see things, but you can't game plan off of a preseason. Preseason, you're getting rudimentary, you know, elementary, vanilla stuff. You know, you're getting, hey, we want to see guys play the right way, see if they're part of, going to be one of us, versus, hey, this is our playbook. Come get this first 15, you know?
Love that from Cam. And I think hard not to be a fan favorite still, obviously, going into year 14 for what he's done. A lot of folks down on him for his season a year ago, played really hurt, and he's one of those guys. I'm anxious to see this bounce back season for Cam.
Yeah, I always, you know, I take it personally when people are like, DeMario's so old, Cam's so old, Derek's so old, because we're the same age. I'm the same age as all three of these guys. But and I'm older than Tyron, but everyone talks about how Tyron's like ancient. But no, you know, what he said there about week one is true, and that's why these week one games, you never want to overreact to them. The Saints could come out and win by 40. I'll say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. The Saints could win by 2. I'll say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. The Saints could lose by 15. I would say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. No one will listen to me in that third scenario. But, you know, it's because you really don't know what to expect, right? Like, you see weird results in week one. Go back to 2022, And we're talking about, or no, 2021, and we're talking about the Saints beating the Packers 38-3 in Jacksonville after getting displaced by a hurricane. And everyone would be like, wow, what's wrong with the Packers? The Saints are the best team in the NFL. And then you fast forward to the NFC Championship. The Saints are sitting at home, right, having not made the playoffs after a 9-8 season. And the Packers are you know, fighting Tom Brady to get to the Super Bowl. So, no, maybe it wasn't Tom Brady. I can't remember who was the other team. But the Packers were in the NFC Championship. But then they were in the 49ers. Either way, don't, you know, the Saints have been good week one. And I think it's because they've been good at adjusting to what the other team is doing.
Closing down First Take. We're going to take a break, but one more segment when we get back here on WWL Saints Radio. Stay tuned as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown to kick off with the Cajun Cannon showing up. Want to hear from you as well, so stay tuned right here on WWL. Back here on the First Take as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown to kick off with the Cajun Cannon coming up at 10. Just check the line, Jeff, for this matchup between Saints and Panthers kicking off at noon. Was at 4, now down to a 3.5-point favorite for the Black and Gold.
Yeah, well, that's still a solid, solid line. I mean, I don't know what to expect, to be honest. Like, I'd like to think the Saints win this game going away, but I think it could be a close one. And like, these games have been close. Even last year when the Panthers were struggling, these were close games because of how the defense plays. So, you know, I'm hoping that the Saints can blow it open at some point, but they just got to execute. They got to run their, you know, read their keys. They got to play well. And if they do that, I don't care what the result is. I just want to win.
As we close things out here, Jeff, big thanks to Ashley and Luke for getting us set up, also having coffee ready for us today.
And a reminder,
most appreciated.
Go to the gate on your ticket. Go to the gate on your ticket.
Coming up next, the Bud Light Countdown to Kickoff with the Cajun Cannon Bobby Hebert. Who dat, everybody? Talk to you soon.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back into First Take. A little more life coming into this Caesars Superdome as they get ready for that noon kickoff between the Saints and Carolina Panthers. Team WWL, our booth is set on the Loge level, Gate B atrium. The Cajun Cannon will be by shortly as the Bud Light Countdown to kickoff starts 10 a.m.
Yeah, it looks like they're stocking up on some Bloody Mary mix over here. So let's
get ready for the real crew, him and Craig showing up.
Get those beans happening.
Exactly. Jeff, when you look at some of the things from this Carolina Panthers squad, I think one of the big additions, obviously, new head coach, but one of the first things I felt like they did was invest heavily in that offensive line after you saw, I think, Bryce Young get sacked, 61 times last year. The poor young guy never really had a chance. And I believe in podcast host Des Johnson joined us, and he talked about the additions of Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt to that Panthers O-line.
Those are big men. Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt are gigantic. They are space eaters. And when you can make Austin Corbett, who's moved to center, when you can make him look little, because Austin Corbett's not a small man, you've done something. And they've paid over $100 million for these two guys. So that was their core. That was their first two signings. When Canales came in and Morgan became the GM, they wanted to fix the defensive line. They wanted to fix the offensive line and build from within. And that's exactly what they've done. You guys would know, being Saints guys, the best years of your offensive line is when you had Drew Brees and you had those two all-pro guards and a center in front of him to solidify that front so he could actually build that pocket. Bryce didn't have that last year. He was getting linemen getting shoved into that pocket, and he didn't really know where to go with the ball after the fact. It's coming out faster. Canales is preaching 2.7 or less, and from what we've seen so far from Bryce, he's really adapted that. Bryce is starting to do stuff like anticipate windows and stuff that you would expect from a top quarterback coming into the league. He's throwing the spots. He's not throwing. Last year he was throwing the players and they weren't open, so separation was an issue. This year he's throwing the spots. And when they played Buffalo in preseason week three, we got a chance to see the starters for a drive and they went down and scored a touchdown. And it was a mix of run, pass. It was amazing as a Panther fan and reporter to see some pass plays from the Panthers a couple weeks ago where the wide receivers were wide open like they were open. Like, we weren't used to seeing that, where there's no one in the frame. It's just Adam Thielen, like, in the middle of the field, and there's no one there, and he's got room to run. It's like, it looks easy again. It looked hard last year for Carolina to just get down the field to be able to kick a field goal. That's not going to be the instance this year. Like, it's Carolina, I really feel like, it's going to sound like a homer, but I feel like Carolina is the one that can have that Houston leap this year.
Wow.
From 2-15 to middle of the pack, or even this division's weird. Like, even nine wins could probably win the NFC South. So you go 5-1 or 4-2, whatever, in the division, you kind of set yourself up for maybe hosting a playoff game. Like, it's wild, but it's not out of reach. Again, Houston did this last year, and just really, if you think 18 months before that, we were talking about how Houston was a wasteland. Nobody wanted to go to Houston, like, with the stuff with the owner and Deshaun Watson and everything else. Now they're getting picked as a Super Bowl contender, like, literally 2 years later. Like, so things can change really fast in the NFL. And if you already have a number one overall pick at quarterback in his second year and a support system around him, we're just starting a year later than we should have with the Bryce Young experiment, in my opinion.
Love hearing from Des Johnson, the Believe in Panthers podcast, which he does with former NFL running back Jonathan Stewart.
I'd like him to narrate my life.
Right. Sounds fantastic. Maybe a little homerism there, thinking that Panthers can make that,
this is homer,
you know,
season,
Houston,
baby.
Texans leap. But I think that because of what the Texans did last year with C.J. Stroud and a young quarterback, there is that hope for teams in that rebuild mode that things can come together a lot more quickly. And I think, obviously, when you address that offensive line and you hear them him talking about how the Saints basically copied that Saints model of getting those, you know, those guards to protect that shorter in stature quarterback to help them in the pocket, might be a big bonus to Bryce Young. And I'll be interested to see if the Saints defense, the pass rush, is able to exploit that at all.
No, I mean, that was a very important thing for Drew during his career, was to be able to, like, that the interior of the pocket. Right, when you're not a mobile guy, you need to be able to step up into throws. You need to be able to kind of create that bubble. And that's what they were able to do with Jari and Carl Nix, I think.
Right.
And, you know, like, that was a big part of Drew's success, especially early in his career, was keeping him clean in that pocket, because you're 6 feet tall. You know, you're a poor man's 6 feet, which means I think Drew was more like 5'11". But whatever. like Bryce Young is a poor man's 5'10". Right? So, like, that's even more important for Bryce. And, no, I mean, that's the smart thing to do. The Giants did the same thing, right? Like, the Giants were like, okay, we got to see what we have in this guy. And the only way you can see what you have is to at least give him some help. Give him a line. Give him a receiver that he can throw to. That's what the Panthers did. They went out and got Xavier Legette. They went out and got Deontay Johnson. They paid a bunch of money on the interior of that offensive line. The Giants did the same thing. They went out and got Malik Nabers. They signed John Runyon Jr. The new Runyon. I remember the old Runyon because he and Michael Strahan used to go at it all the time.
Right.
And then Illuminor, I think, for the Giants. So, you know, like, that's when you are trying to figure out whether you have a guy at the quarterback position, you can't constantly be undercutting his ability to have success and then be like, well, you know, he just didn't have it. Like, no, you are a part of this. You are an equal part of this conversation. So we'll see how that goes for him. But I think he is in a much better situation this year than he was last year. And the Frank Reich, you know,
one thing
that I tell people all the time, and, you know, the Panthers are a perfect example of, like, everyone's like, okay, anybody but DA, it's you know, you could hire anybody and you would be happy. I promise you,
be careful what you wish.
It can and very much will in certain situations get worse. And that's what happened in Carolina. Like, they were like, they ran Matt Rhule out of town, and then they were like, oh, Frank Reich, he can't possibly be worse than Matt Rhule. And then by week 11, you had the special teams coordinator as your head coach. You're like, oh, okay, it got worse. You're right. And then you go into this year and you have the number one overall pick and you're not even the team making it.
Wow.
It can always get worse. But no, I think I am curious to see Bryce, because I like Bryce. I think everyone's quit on Bryce already because he's the number one pick.
I knew he shouldn't have been.
Yeah, and so, you know, I think Bryce is gonna surprise some people this year, but I don't know about that Texans turnaround. I don't think that's, you know, every year there seems to be one team that does that. I don't know if it's going to be the Panthers, but even, like, from the Panthers' perspective, you won two games last year. If you go out and you win six or seven games and you're in
the conversation
for the NFC South, you know, throughout the majority of the season, that's a success. That's a big improvement. So from that perspective, I do think they have the ability to turn things around from where they were. I think, you know, 10 wins and a playoff berth is a little outside of the likely scenarios here. But I'm not going to begrudge anyone for being a homer in week zero.
right? And having that hope.
Like, you should have. Like, that's the time you should be talking about how, what if things go right? What will have to happen?
Yeah.
Not, here's all the things that I think are going to be terrible. Like, that's a, who does that benefit?
Looking at the new addition here at head coach, we asked Des Johnson about new head coach Dave Canales, what he brings to this Panthers punch.
He is that type of personality that doesn't need an alarm clock. Like, he literally is the type that wakes up on his own, like, every morning, because his mind just can't wait to start off his day in his world. Like, he's that positive. And in the very beginning, it kind of came off like, there's no way this dude could be this positive all the time. But he is. He really is. Like, that's him. And he's a player's coach. The players adore him. They love him. They will run through a wall from him. And the difference with him, we were talking about this on Believe in Panthers Tuesday. Dave Canales, his coaching style is different than, say, like a Bill Belichick or the old guard, where it was like tough love type stuff. Dave is the type where he will tell you, this is the drill we're running today. This is why we're running the drill. And this is what we're going to achieve by completing this drill. Like, he'll explain to the players why they're doing something, as opposed to just doing it and trust me, this is going to work if we do it right. And it gives the players ownership, and the players, especially the veterans, they love the fact that, okay, so we're going to do this Oklahoma drill, whatever. Why? Oh, that's why we're doing it. Or we're going to do this 2-minute drill in the red zone today. Why? That's why we're doing, like, and they're getting that explanation. So Dave is I'd call him one of these new breed coaches, one of the younger coaches, like a Sean McVay or a Mike McDonald, or someone that's kind of doing it a little different than their predecessors would have. And it's a little jarring here in Carolina, because we're used to having defensive guys be our coach really throughout our entire history, from Dom Capers all the way down to Ron Rivera. The formula here has typically been defense with a defensive head at front, so your offense is a bit conservative. With Dave, it sounds like it's gonna be kind of still the same, but a little bit flipped, where they are gonna be very heavy on the run. He's mentioned that so many times now, and I do believe him on that. Finally, a coach here is like, we're gonna run the ball, and they're actually gonna run it, which will help protect Bryce. Bryce is going to become this guru at this quick, almost West Coast offense type of passing game. The key is to get the ball out to your guys in spots and basically conduct the offense. Bryce can do that. He can do that. He won a Heisman doing that. So that's not a problem. They've got two capable running backs. I'm really interested in seeing Miles Sanders in this offense, because they paid him $25 million, and he was just kind of lost in the sauce last year. Yeah. But now we know why he was. Plus, we mentioned on Believe in Panthers at the end of the preseason last year, Miles had a hip injury and went into the season with it and never was 100%. So people piled onto him because of the amount of money that he was getting paid, but the situation just didn't lend itself to help Miles Sanders. And now, with a new regime coming in, I feel like Dave Canales kind of looked at the running back room and was like, oh, Miles Sanders is here. Miles Sanders is a great running back. We can use it. Oh, Chuba Hubbard's here. He almost rushed for 1,000 yards. You have stuff here. Like, we don't have to go rushing out. But let's just go get Jonathan Brooks in the second round, just in case, you know, just to kind of round it out. Like, they've thought of everything. And it's weird, as a Panther fan for 30-plus years, it's only happened a couple of times where the regime kind of figures it out. And you're like, oh, okay, this might work. And we get it before the nation does. And by the time the nation catches up, they're 7-1 or 8-0. Like, where'd Carolina come from? I'm like, yeah. We were kind of seeing all this happen, but it doesn't happen frequently. So when it does happen, people are so shocked that Carolina's doing this. But I sense the same thing I sense when Rivera was first here. It took Rivera a little longer to get it going, but same situation. You got a number one overall pick here. You're having to build around him. How are you going to build your offense? How are you going to build this defense to support that? It's the exact same situation. Bryce is just a half a foot shorter.
Yeah, something that Des mentioned there about the Panthers was the running game. And that was one question I have too coming into this season, is what can we expect from a guy like Miles Sanders, who really kind of disappeared last year and people were considering him washed already at age 27.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, when you talk about, okay, why did Bryce Young get sacked 61 times, 62 times? Why did that offense struggle as much as it did? Well, when you can't run the ball, nothing good is going to happen for you. And you know, they didn't have the weapons for Bryce last year. They didn't have the protection. So, yeah, I think they are going to try to establish the run today, and the Saints are going to have to hold up. Because if you can get the Panthers into passing situations, the Saints have the advantage. You can get Chase Young on the field. You can bump Cam Jordan into that NASCAR package and really get after him. if you're constantly in third and short, you can't do that. You can't take advantage of your pass rushers because, you know, you gotta protect the run. And, you know, Saints are without Colin Saunders today. That's really his forte. He's a run stuffer. He's a run downs defensive tackle. So you're going to have to rely on Brian Brzee probably on the early downs. You're going to have to, you know, Kendall Vickers is probably the guy. I would imagine John Ridgeway will be inactive. I think A.T. Perry will be inactive with that injured hand. And you're going to have to pick somebody else. I don't know. I don't think you go into it with five defensive tackles. So we'll have to see how that all plays out. But someone's going to have to step up and be that run-stuffing defensive tackle because the Panthers are going to try to protect Bryce by establishing the run.
Looking at the Panthers' passing attack, too, you really just had a guy in, you know, Adam Thielen a year ago. They obviously upgraded with adding DJ Deontay Chark, Johnson, right. And then drafting Xavier Leggett. And, you know, from a fan point of view, I hate to see a guy like Leggett ending on the Panthers just because I like his personality. I like the talent level there. But obviously he becomes now, you know, black and gold enemy, public enemy number one on their side. But a really fun interview all the time from him. And just you see the joy of playing football when you talk to Xavier Leggett.
He's got that South Carolina accent. I throw him with a deep ball, man. But, you know, he's a fun guy. And seriously, listen to him talk. That accent is fantastic. Very much a South Carolina guy.
Definitely.
South Carolina boy. But, we're not going to talk a ton more about the Panthers the rest of the way. I do want to mention Derek Brown is crazy. He had 103 tackles last season. Think about it. He's a defensive tackle, or at least a defensive end in a 3-4, which is a defensive tackle, right? The next highest tackle, that's an NFL record. He set an NFL record for tackles at the defensive line position. Not just defensive tackles, defensive ends, too. The next highest total for a defensive lineman after that last year was Harrison Phillips from the Vikings. He had 92 tackles. Pete Werner had 93 tackles. He's a linebacker. That's nuts. And part of that is, hey, you know, teams are trying to run the ball on you. The Panthers were terrible against the run.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's getting a lot of opportunities. But he's a big boy. He's going to be involved in that action. And the Saints are going to have to figure that out. You're going to have to double team that guy. Like, you cannot just sit there and say, okay, whoever is lined up over him, you take care of him. You know, Eric McCoy, you take him one-on-one. No. You do not want to be in one-on-one matchups with Derek Brown.
Speaking of defensive tackles, a guy we love here is Cam Jordan, who will be seeing some time moving inside this season. We'll hear from him on some cuts when we get back from the break. Talking a little more black and gold, of course, now switching gears from our little Panthers preview to back into Saints talk. Want to hear from you, Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line 504-260-1870. Kicking off things here in the Superdome, high noon. Mike Hawes, Deuce McAllister on the call. We'll be having the Bud Light countdown to kickoff coming up at 10 a.m. with the Cajun Cannon after First Take ends. Well, first, we're going to take a break and be back with more right after this on WWL Saints Radio. Who dat? Welcome back into First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Hanging out here in the Superdome as we get ready for that noon kickoff between the Saints and the Carolina Panthers. Well, team's getting going. NFC South showdown right off the bat to start the season. And you would think, you know, maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Atlanta Falcons be squaring off too, but that's not the case. We just have the only in-division rivalry matchup in week one.
Yeah, and the Saints get, like, most of their division games out of the way by, like, week 10.
Yeah.
So, you know, these
usually
early,
they close them out, right?
Yeah, I mean, these games are important, man. Like, you gotta win these games, especially, you know, you look at, okay, what's happened the last 3 years? You know, they've missed the playoffs 2 out of 3 years. Twice, two of those times, they went 9-8 and missed the playoffs in week 18 on a tiebreaker. You know why that happens? Because these NFC matchups and these NFC South matchups in particular, you don't take advantage of them early in the season, and they come back to bite you. The Saints went 4-2 in the division last year. Like, you should be, man, if you can go 4-2 in your division, you should be happy about
it. You set yourself up for success, yeah.
Yeah, you got to sweep one of those teams. I know Bobby's talked about this. You got to sweep one of those teams, right?
And
you got to go 1-1 against the other two. And the Panthers have to be the team you look at and say, well, the Saints should sweep them. Right, and so if you can't sweep the Panthers, then you got to sweep somebody else to go 4-2. Because 3-3, that's not good enough. Not if you want to win the division. If you're trying to sneak, if you're trying to backdoor into the playoffs, you can be like, all right, fine, we'll try to win the. You know, hopefully we can have a good record in the NFC and sneak in past a team like the Packers last year, right? But you got to go beat those teams head to head,
right?
And that's what the Saints didn't do. So that's what these games are. You know, you gotta play well. You know, like, that's the frustrating thing is, like, losing a game that you played well, it's frustrating, but you can at least take positives out of that. Losing a game because you came out flat and were down 10 at halftime and then couldn't make the comeback, which happened at least three times last year, maybe four. You know, that those are the games where you look at, and that's when I understand why people are frustrated with the quarterback and the head coach, because that's where you expect, okay, the quarterback is a veteran quarterback, got to come out hot. You got to come out playing well, not work your way into a game like a rookie quarterback. So that's what we'll see today. Well, that's what, if the fans leave happy today, it's going to be because that's not what happened, or that's what happened is Derek Carr came out and played well, and the Saints took advantage of what should be an overmatched opponent.
Looking at the defensive side of the ball, obviously the biggest strength everybody feels is this Saints squad. And a key piece on that, the old man in Cam Jordan, love talking to him, hear what he has to say, very vocal, great personality. Well, he's entering, you know, everyone's going to feel old here because I certainly do, year 14 for Cam. Does he get as excited for these games even though it is week 14? What's it like for him?
I'm like a little kid today. It's like, you know, the hard work you put in through training camp, being away from the fam, focusing in on honing the craft. You do all that to get to game week. You know, at the final preseason game, you're just like, get me to week one. We're in week one now. So it's a good place to be in. I think we got phenomenal talent on the team. I think we have great leaders on the team. I think we have great players on this team. And all we have to do is realize our greater potential and go capitalize.
Cam also was asked early on, what is the challenge of this Panthers offense?
Darn near a whole new offensive line, for sure. New OC, everything's sort of different. And at the same time, it's about us. So we got to go ahead and play our calls. We have to play our techniques. We have to focus on what we know we can be successful at.
You got a lot of different players coming into that mix, and he mentioned a new offensive coordinator for the Panthers. So Cam was asked, you know, you really don't know what to expect from Carolina, even though they are an NFC South familiar opponent.
Carolina's revamped their whole offense. You know, we'll see what changes have been made when we get in the game. The great thing about week one is you're so full of energy, you can't wait to hit the field. The worst part about week one is there's no such thing as like a true game plan because you're expecting to see things, but you can't game plan off of a preseason. Preseason, you're getting rudimentary, you know, elementary, vanilla stuff. You know, you're getting, hey, we want to see guys play the right way, see if they're part of, going to be one of us, versus, hey, this is our playbook. Come get this first 15, you know?
Love that from Cam. And I think hard not to be a fan favorite still, obviously, going into year 14 for what he's done. A lot of folks down on him for his season a year ago, played really hurt, and he's one of those guys. I'm anxious to see this bounce back season for Cam.
Yeah, I always, you know, I take it personally when people are like, ah, oh, DeMario's so old, Cam's so old, Derek's so old, because we're the same age. I'm the same age as all three of these guys. But and I'm older than Tyron, but and everyone talks about how Tyron's like ancient. But no, you know, what he said there about week one is true, and that's why these week one games, you never want to overreact to them. The Saints could come out and win by 40. I'll say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. The Saints could win by 2. I'll say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. The Saints could lose by 15. I would say, pump the brakes, don't overreact. No one will listen to me in that third scenario. But, you know, it's because you really don't know what to expect, right? Like, these, you see weird results in week one. Go back to 2022. And we're talking about, 2021, and we're talking about the Saints beating the Packers 38-3 in Jacksonville after getting displaced by a hurricane. And everyone would be like, wow, what's wrong with the Packers? The Saints are the best team in the NFL. And then you fast forward to the NFC Championship, the Saints are sitting at home, right, having not made the playoffs after a 9-8 season, and the Packers are you know, fighting Tom Brady to get to the Super Bowl. So, maybe it wasn't Tom Brady. I can't remember who was the other team, but the Packers were in the NFC Championship, but they might have been in the 49ers. Either way, the Saints have been good week one, and I think it's because they've been good at adjusting to what the other team is doing.
Closing down First Take, we're going to take a break, but one more segment when we get back here on WWL Saints Radio. Stay tuned as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown to kick off with the Cajun Cannon showing up. Want to hear from you as well, so stay tuned right here on WWL. Back here on the First Take as we get ready for the Bud Light Countdown to kick off with the Cajun Cannon coming up at 10. Just check the line, Jeff, for this matchup between Saints and Panthers kicking off at noon. Was at 4, now down to a 3.5-point favorite for the black and gold.
Yeah, well, that's still a solid, solid line. I mean, I don't know what to expect, to be honest. Like, I'd like to think the Saints win this game going away, but I think it could be a close one. And like, these games have been close. Even last year when the Panthers were struggling, these were close games because of how the defense plays. So, you know, I'm hoping that the Saints can blow it open at some point, but they just got to execute. They got to run their, you know, read their keys. They got to play well. And if they do that, I don't care what the result is. I just want to win.
As we close things out here, Jeff, big thanks to Ashley and Luke for getting us set up, also having coffee ready for us today.
And a reminder,
appreciate it.
Go to the gate on your ticket. Go to the gate on your ticket.
Coming up next, the Bud Light countdown to kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Who dat, everybody? Talk to you soon.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.